Live from Derby, this is The Morning Break with Charlotte Marshall on Teachers Talk Radio.
Good morning, and what a morning it's been already. I seem to have broken every piece of technology that exists, and it just seems to be falling to pieces all around me. But today we're going to be talking about the things that make you laugh, the things that make you angry, things that leave you speechless, and if that's not technology, it's most likely the students. So hopefully we'll get through the next hour without any more technological hiccups. Hopefully we'll make it.
Derby. This is The Morning Break with Charlotte Marshall on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live on the Podbean app or desktop player. Just head over to www.podbean.com/lsw/ttradio or search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio.
Good morning. Thank you everybody for joining me. It's going to be an interesting one, I think, because again already I seem to have broken and pressed the wrong things, and everything that can go wrong is going to go wrong today. So I feel like that's how we're about to keep going with our Friday show. So hopefully we'll make it through the next hour. Hopefully we won't destroy the whole system, but who knows, let's see how that one goes. Okay. So as I tried to mention before, I'm going to be talking today about the things that students say. And we spend most of our day with the most intelligent, the brightest, the sharpest teenagers that you can imagine. And so I've often wondered whether it would be worth me writing a book about the things that my learners say, because sometimes it's just those golden moments. The last time that I managed to get on air with everybody, I was chatting about how we made it into our teaching profession. And I also spoke about why we stay there. And I have to say that I think the students unanimously was the reason. I think we all agree that it's the students are the reasons that we stay in this really quite stressful job. And part of that is the fact that the students keep us on our toes, they keep us engaged, they keep us entertained. And so that's what I wanted to chat about today. So that's my first invitation. What is it that students have said to you today, the last week, the last month, that have left you speechless in that moment where as a teacher you have to not laugh because you're the professional? You have to wonder how you're going to react to it because everybody else in the room is watching you. You also have to wonder how you move forward. So what are those things that students have said to you that have left you speechless, that make you angry, that make you just wonder what life is all about? So do feel free to either give me a call. It would be lovely to chat to some other teachers this morning. Leave me a message. That would also be wonderful to hear from you on there. Or equally, you can do this on Twitter as well. So that's where we're going to be at today. Now, I have to start by the general admission that as I was thinking about this, I've realised quite how much I've aged. And that's a little bit terrifying to start on a Friday morning. I think we had existentialism last time, so let's start with ageing this time. And I was talking about, or rather I was thinking about, the things that I must have said as a teenager. Because there's this idea that as teachers, we are, or we never were, the students in the room, that somehow we are immune from having been that person that said the ridiculous thing. So to kick us off, I thought it would be only fair if I'm going to talk about the wonderful things that teenagers have said, if I own up to a few of my own mistakes. And this is where I'm glad that it's a radio show and you can't see my really quite red face in having to admit some of these things, in that what I've said over the past. And I remember two really vividly from a classroom environment where I know that my teacher would have just stood there thinking, oh, my life, what am I having to do? One of those was year eight French, and on the board, the teacher had written nom. We were doing a character profile in French. And in that moment, in that lesson, I turned to my friend, I was like, Azir, who's ever going to name their child nom? And obviously completely missed the point that nom was where I was supposed to write my character's name. And so again, I think back on those moments where I was saying some fairly ridiculous things and wonder, how did that teacher not just crack up? How did I not become the target of banter? Because I absolutely deserved it. And so again, if you're just joining me, I can see people entering the studio, which is great. Hello. But it's that idea of what did students say that leave you speechless? What is it that they say that you have to check yourself before you react, knowing that all eyes are on you. The other thing to bear in mind is the way that teenagers, particularly, as I've said, are very quick-witted. They're very sharp. And thinking back over the years of where I've done that, where teenagers take things so very literally, not necessarily in the classroom, but I vividly remember my carer saying, when you get in from school, can you make sure that you put the carrots on? And my reply was, on what? And obviously the message was to turn the oven on, but as a teenager, I thought I was particularly clever. So I thought I would start by giving a few of my examples that have left me a little bit frustrated, let's say, some of the teenagers, the comments that students have said over the last 6 months, possibly more recently, even maybe the last 3 months, have just left me completely speechless. And I did start a conversation with a few colleagues and on Twitter as well, talking about where we have students saying certain things and you just wonder, seriously, that you're asking that question? And one of those is based around assessments and assignments. So I imagine a lot of people at the moment, a lot of people listening to this, are going through the teacher assess grades process, going through assessments, gathering evidence. And we have to communicate this with our learners. So the learners know also that the pressure's on at the moment, that they have to perform, that they have to produce this evidence that's going to best represent them. And how stressful is that? That's really difficult for our learners at the moment. So there has to be an amount of grace. However, I reached my limit maybe 3 weeks ago in that we use Teams as a platform to deliver our lessons when we're doing remotely, but we've kept it as part of our Moodle, as part of our sharing resources. And in every lesson, I've made sure at the beginning of every lesson, I've said that the assignment, when it's going to be, what the topic is going to be on, to a point where we've almost created our own class jingle that they knew when the dates were going to be and they knew which assessment was going to be assessed on which day. I made a little spreadsheet. I put the spreadsheet on Teams and I tagged everybody in it saying, this is your assignment. This is the schedule we're going to be following. And you can kind of see where this is going, can't you? On Bank Holiday Monday, my phone was going crazy. And potentially this is another situation. Should I have Teams on my phone? Should I turn the notifications off? Should I really be checking work on Bank Holiday Monday? Probably not. But my phone was buzzing as if it was just had a life of its own. So I checked it out. I had a look to see what the problem was. I had 5 different students asking me. So it seems to be, Charlotte, that nobody knows what the assessment's going to be tomorrow. And my first reply was really gracious. I said, well, I think if you look on Teams, but don't worry, it's on the poetry anthology. And then the next message asked literally the same question. So again, no one seems to know what the assessment's on. I was going, okay, well, it's on Teams. And if you remember, we've looked at this every lesson. And I could feel myself slowly but surely getting angrier and angrier and angrier as I was going through it, because I just kept thinking, but I've told you. I've told you this 100 times. How is it possible that you don't know? And the other thing that left me wondering is, how have you not looked for it first? How is your first point of call to message your tutor on a bank holiday? Not necessarily because it's invading my bank holiday, but more likely because you're not going to get an answer. It would be a little bit bizarre, really, for teachers to be available 24/7. And yet that's the expectation. So this idea of their messaging saying, where's the assessment? I don't know where the assessment is. But it's right there. And I feel that maybe some parents might be listening in and maybe thinking, yeah, that's just teenagers though. And I think I've been guilty of that myself. And maybe even as adults, where you go, where's my phone? It's in your hand. It's that moment of we ask far too quickly rather than investigate. By the 5th learner, I was really beginning to pull my hair out and sort of say, have I missed something? Have I not communicated this to the group? Surely if 5 students are asking, that obviously I've not put that material available. So I went back through the Teams and found that actually, no, I had. But then I also discovered later that those same 5 students had had a group chat, obviously outside of Teams, outside of a central forum. And each one of them has said, don't worry, I will ask her. They'd all ask me. When I shared my frustration with this on Twitter, I had another person reply and say that the email the night before the assessment was asking, so what's the assessment on tomorrow? I just want to make sure I've been revising everything right. Okay, well, if you've been revising everything right, I mean, how do you begin to unpick that. The assessment's tomorrow. And I'm a big advocate for maybe not doing revision the night before. I'm one of those teachers that would say, if you've maybe not done it by now, should we really be encouraging cramming? And I do worry that late at night when those emails come in, whether we should be replying to them, not necessarily because we shouldn't, because it's our time away from school, college, work as well, but also, does it actually help? Does it help them? Or are you resolving anything? Or what if you said something that maybe they weren't expecting? Is that not just going to set off a whole other line of stress? So that's another one, but that's mostly been around about the assessments. Another colleague, so someone from a different platform, replied and said that they'd outlined the assessment, practiced the assessment, they'd done three class collaborative plans, and then after the students had finished the assessment, the student went to the teacher and said, well, I did my best, but I didn't actually know what type of assessment it would be on, so I'm not sure if what I wrote was relevant. And again, it's that moment where you just, oh, are you kidding me? You can't say that you didn't know. You can't say that you weren't aware of what we were doing when we spent all this time prepping and planning. I do wonder if at this point, maybe the students are practicing a little bit of self-preservation. Maybe they're saying, I don't know what it was, because they're afraid that maybe they've got that wrong. I do see that an awful lot, that students do tend to worry about whether they've got the exact answer, and there's almost this need for you to say, oh, you know, I'm sure you did wonderfully, because it's not actually about what they've written, it's about their self-esteem. I promise this is going to be the last one around assessments, and it would be great to hear from any of you that are listening around what students have said that leaves you speechless, leaves you saying, seriously, how is it that that's a question that you're answering? But the one more was, obviously in remote teaching, everything's been upside down, inside out, left to centre. It's just been mad, hasn't it? But one of the things I think that teachers have done particularly well is make sure learners know when and where they need to be. So again, we're on Teams tomorrow. We're going to be on Teams tomorrow. Where are we tomorrow? We're on Teams. Where are we? We're on Teams. So having that conversation where you repeat yourself maybe, well, 50 times, or it feels like 50 times. Another colleague of mine was saying, again, that she said, remember, we're all back in college tomorrow. Put an announcement out on Teams. It's tomorrow. And then the learners reply with, where are we all going to be? Are we online or are we in college? And you think, oh my word, I feel like I've said it, repeated myself 100 times. So those are sort of things that frustratingly leave you speechless, I think, frustratingly kind of make you wonder, had you been talking to yourself? And seriously, what is the point? Because how are you going to get through this if this is how it's going to be? If it's going to be them repeating everything back to you, it feels a little bit as though you're screaming into the wind. So it would be great, like I said, to hear from anybody if you've had experiences of where students have said things and you just kind of feel exacerbated. You go, no, I've already told you this, and I've already told you this a lot. This is not me just saying it for the first time. But for now, it would be really good to talk to you about the competition that's running at the moment. And so if I press the correct button, this should hopefully give you more information. Let's give it a try.
Do you have something to say about the future of education? Maybe you have some positive ideas about the way things could or should be in the future. Then enter our Teachers Talk Radio competition. Submit a 10-minute video presentation to us by 22nd of May, presenting your ideas about the future of education, and you could win £50. Our host team will select 5 winners who will each win £50 and have their video feature at a high-profile education event. To enter, simply send your video entry to teacherstalkradio@gmail.com with the subject line TTR Competition. We will announce the 5 winners after 22nd of May on Teachers Talk Radio live.
Doesn't that sound amazing? I think one of the things that teachers really need is to feel as though they're consulted, because more often than not, things happen around us without us necessarily getting a say. And so this is a really good opportunity for you to have a say and put your ideas forward and have that shared experience of people listening to you and then pushing those ideas even further. So hopefully letting other people hear your views as well. So if you do feel compelled to do so, please do take part in that competition. There's just been a message, so I think it's Mr. Kex, who said the annual event that we're year 11 student who paid no attention. capital letters for emphasis, I think, there. And I feel the pain. I feel the pain if they weren't paying attention in class for pretty much the whole year. Comes to your room on the day of the exam to ask the question, what do we need to revise? Yeah, absolutely. I think this is where we've all had that experience, haven't we? We've all had the experience where you just go, sit. What? I remember one year teaching GCSE to students who were resitting it for maybe, I think, the second or third time. So they'd gone through the GCSE school, secondary school, done the GCSEs. This was at the stage where everybody had to have a C. So again, showing my age a little bit. And I was teaching them again to prepare them to do the GCSE again in order to get that golden C. And on the morning, this learner hadn't turned up yet. So we quickly ran to the office, got personal details, phoned from college and said, are you on your way in? And they said, why? Have I got a lesson today? No, you don't have a lesson. You do have your exam, though. Please come into college to do your exam. They're like, oh, right, yeah. Well, I'll ring my friend as well, because he probably needs to know as well. You think, wow, that's where we're at. So what hope do I have in getting you to remember content if you can't even remember what's going to keep you doing the assessment? You can't even remember the date of your assessment. And again, I put it at the beginning of every PowerPoint of every lesson. It goes out on every text message to learners. But yeah, ringing that learner to then say, you know it's your exam today, don't you? What is it? Oh, right, I've committed. yes, you have. Okay, so the next idea or the next thing I was thinking about when we think what the students say is largely around what makes us angry. Because we've spoken, and I spoke with Tom before about keeping your cool, and how do you keep your cool in the classroom? Is it okay to ever get angry or things like that? And I must admit, I think the things that I've written down for this idea of what makes me angry doesn't actually necessarily come from the students. So I feel as though maybe I'm straying a little bit from the topic, but I promise I won't stay away for very long. But there are three that really kind of rub me up the wrong way. It will nearly always get a reaction from me. Even if it's not a verbal one, you will get an eye roll. I promise you that. And those are learners come first, learners are customers. It's not about qualifications. And I think each one of these requires a little bit of explanation, because I don't want to say that learners don't come first. That's not the message that I'm saying. I feel as though for teachers, that should be a given. So this is where we've got managers, administrators, SLT saying, learners come first. And you go, really? I hadn't actually thought about that. My goodness, I better actually start considering my learners. It really does frustrate me. It's kind of because of this, we must make sure that their experience is wonderful. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll stop throwing 6-inch nails at my learners and try. You think, no, you can't be serious. You can't be serious that you're telling teachers that learners come first. Normally, that statement of learners comes first is usually in response to a staff member raising a concern or asking for some kind of compensation concession, maybe, or a stress or a pressure or something that's happening at the time. And it always seems to be this stock, well, learners come first. So, yeah, yes, but what I'm asking for is to help the learners. So if, for example, it might be extra time on submitting some kind of data. And I say, well, we need it because we need to enhance learner experience. Yes, I understand that. But I've currently got learners in my classroom that are not having a good learner experience because I have to fill the data in. So if we could just give me a little bit more time on the data, the learners that are currently in our classrooms would benefit. So maybe this one, I really appreciate for those of you that have messaged and said about what it is that students have said, but what is it that maybe SLT say that frustrate you a little bit, or again, maybe even just leave you speechless? The learners come first mantra, I suppose, has led into this idea that learners are customers and that the customer is always right. I have a big issue with that as well, because it also suggests that everybody's having the same experience, and it ignores the fact that if we see learners as customers, they don't all come with the same amount of money to purchase what they need. If you can follow the analogy for that one, it feels highly inappropriate. Because what we immediately do is distinguish the learners based on how much they can afford, inverted commas, to get from their class. So if we're talking about this, and if you can stick with me with the analogy, you're going to have one learner that's incredibly wealthy, who's in a very secure home environment, that has every resource, that's had a great amount of sleep last night, that's had breakfast, that is well prepared for the day. And then you're going to have someone that maybe has 50p to their name. That's the learner that maybe isn't in a secure home environment and that doesn't have everything that they need and is maybe using next door neighbor's Wi-Fi to access some of the materials. So where we argue that learners are customers, it starts to suggest that all the learners are the same and that they all have this understanding. And that, again, it really does grate on me. So I'd be curious to know what people think about those two. So learners come first and learners are customers. The first one, like I said, seems like a non-statement, because my answer would always be, well, obviously. And the next one, I don't like the social message maybe that it communicates. And then the last one, where this was again SLT, that said, well, it's not about qualifications. And I thought, well, what is it about? Why are we driving these kids so hard? What are we doing if we don't add any value, if we don't place any value on qualifications? What? There's got to be some level of acknowledgement that qualifications is what the kids are here for. Hopefully they have a great holistic experience. Hopefully they gain cultural capital. Hopefully they gain relationship skills. Hopefully they learn all of those things alongside it. But they are there for the qualification. They're not just turning up for fun. Well, I hope not. Although some of them turn up not for fun. They turn up, I think, because they've got nothing else to do. And there's a whole other series or episode in that. But it would be great to hear from any of you where you've had a senior leadership team member or manager or administrator that says something and, again, just kind of makes you wonder, what are they thinking? Where are they coming from? Yeah, absolutely. So again, thank you, Mr. Kexley. Learners as customers sounds horribly corporate. I can imagine a large multi-academy trust using the term. The thing is, I'm not sure that it's limited to the large academy trust. I feel like that it should, you know, that's maybe where it leaps in, but I'm not sure that's where it necessarily ends. And I think that could be where we start to get issues, because again, if we're all educators and if we all live in the same forum, those terms start to move, don't they? They start to appear in other forums in other areas. So if we have it appear in an academy trust that has a CPD event with a different academy trust, it spreads. But that's one of the things that it really does frustrate me. I don't, learners as customers, really not sure how I feel about that. I think I wouldn't want the learners to see themselves as customers either. I'm not sure that's an incredibly edifying label. I'm not sure what label would be better. Maybe that could be, again, another topic for conversation. What could we maybe encourage our learners to see themselves as, so that they then engage with the content? And I know that a lot of learners will say, well, I just don't like that teacher. And that's, again, another issue, isn't it, where you've got students saying, well, that teacher said this, or that teacher said this. And you think, well, that's that teacher's style. What are you hoping to get out of that? Does very much start to feel like children playing parents off against one another sometimes. We seem to be going okay so far with the technology. So whoop, whoop. I wasn't convinced I was going to make it this far. So at this point, we will switch over to the news so you can hear the latest update from Megan. And then we will get into the things that students have made you laugh, and the things that students have said that just kind of make you feel better, the things that keep you going. And there's been so many of those, I feel, through remote teaching, where maybe the stresses from managers has been coming down, where we've had extra pressures put on us from above. But then the learners are the ones that will check in with us. The learners tend to be the ones that say, are you okay? Are you sure? Do you need a minute? So we're going to talk about a few of those in a moment as well. So do feel free to contribute. Do feel free to let me know your experiences of the things that learners have said that have made you laugh, the things that maybe managers or SLT have said that make you want to cry. And then we'll get into a little bit more of the comedy value. So over to the news for now.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News with Megan Goods.
This is your latest Teachers Talk Radio News. Senior broadcast journalist and ITV political editor Robert Peston has found himself struggling to defend a tweet which claimed teachers did not very much teaching during lockdown. The claim was made in a series of tweets looking at official data on the economy, released on Wednesday. The tweet sparked outrage in the Twitter community, even prompting a response from the account claiming to be run by Larry the Downing Street Cat, who tweeted, "Robert, it's not too late to delete this and apologise." Peston did offer an explanation, later tweeting, "Sorry. I know all teachers work incredibly hard, whether locked down or not. I was not making a point about the amazing contribution they make, but through no fault of their own, we know their productivity is impaired by lockdown. If that was not so, there would have been no need to cancel exams or commission expensive catch-up programmes. In other words, the price of standardised educational outputs has risen significantly, we hope only temporarily." This response did little to stem replies from offended parties, however, with the original tweet now having 2,500 comments and 1,900 retweets. Boris Johnson has unveiled a new plan to commit £55 million into a programme to drive crucial research into education reforms, turbocharging efforts to get girls into school and learning. Johnson stated, "Supporting girls to get 12 years of quality education is one of the smartest investments we can make as the world recovers from COVID-19. Otherwise, we risk creating a lost pandemic generation. Across the world, there is a vast untapped resource, girls whose education has been cut short or denied altogether, who could be leading efforts to pull their communities out of poverty." The Foreign Secretary will also launch a Girls Education Action Plan to set out the steps to help meet the UK's target to get 40 million more girls into school and 20 million more reading by the age of 10 by 2026. That was your daily education news briefing.
Live from...
So that's the news, and how interesting that it ties in so beautifully with what we were talking about just before, in that tweet suggesting that teachers are not doing their job, not working hard enough. Now that's certainly something that's going to get a reaction from me for sure. It's so frustrating that the job that we do is misunderstood, and it does feel that so often underappreciated as well. And so again, when I was chatting before, I was talking about what keeps us in our job when it's so stressful, when it's so pressured, when there are so many challenges, and not just from within our college or school settings, but actually from the external communities as well. So we've had a lot of headlines recently about what teachers are or aren't doing, and again I always kind of question how much do they know and have they ever been a teacher. And you can't be surprised to think that this is then what's going to create a mass exodus from the profession. And this, I again saw something else on Twitter recently where it was talking about there's going to be a national teacher shortage as of the autumn, and then a very quick reply about, well, don't worry, I won't ramp my prices up too much when the national shortage appears, I thought was really pertinent. So with all of those pressures and with all of those comments making our jobs just a little bit more difficult, it has to make you wonder, why are we still here? And so almost unanimously, when I ask this question of colleagues, it's normally the students. The students are the reason that we stay in our jobs. And part of that is the things that they say, those little glimmers of laughter and banter that you can have with a really good class through the duration of your lesson, that then makes you have a spring in your step, keeps you going until the next really horrible group that you have to just head down and get through it. So I've got a few of those from my teaching experience, one particularly recently, and some that I've asked colleagues if it's okay if I share those with you. But it would be great also if you've had these experiences, the things that students say that just make you burst out laughing to a point where you forget almost that this is your job and you realise that this is what you're here for. My most recent one was when we were talking about the taming of the shrew in a lesson with my first year A-level students, so year 12s. And we were talking about trying to seize the day. So in hoping to get them to engage and to give them a voice in my lesson, I knew the expression YOLO. I don't like the expression YOLO, but I wanted to get the learners to contribute. So I was talking about contextualizing language and how we would say copy diem and seize the day is not an expression necessarily that we hear anymore, but we have seen language change. So I was gearing this up, hoping that one of my learners would be able to respond and give me the the acronym YOLO. And so I said, you know, carpe diem, what's the expression that you use? What's the expression that you would use that replicates seize the day, you know, that living for the moment thing? And one of my learners, without blinking, just replied, said, carpe diem, we don't live for the moment anymore. We're all suicidal. It had... I laughed. I just had to laugh because, as terrifying as that is, it was just classic. The delivery of it was brilliant. Worrying that this was the reaction, that they don't see the value in seizing the day or living for the moment because they're just completely overwhelmed with stress. But that moment, and I did tweet it out because it was just so, it was just golden. And perhaps it was one of those that you need to be there for. But yeah. Carpe diem, we don't live for the moment anymore. We're all suicidal. And again, the learners in the room just kind of went, yeah, mood. it was just that moment. And again, it broke the tension and we laughed about it. Thankfully, we all laughed about it. I didn't have to safeguard anybody. Everybody's okay. But it was a brilliant moment. And there have been quite a few of those where you start out by you're wanting the learners to say the right thing and you're wanting the learners to give the answer that you've got in your mind. But unfortunately, learners don't read your mind and sometimes they say the things that you don't want to. So when teaching a Seamus Heaney lesson, this is another one where I should have just stopped. I should have just paused and maybe not pushed. But it had the word brine in it. So I was trying to explain what brine was, and I thought it was a fairly obvious thing. So I said, okay, so if something's in brine, what is it? Now, in my mind, I was thinking that they would say being preserved or salted or any of those things. But no, in answer to the question of, okay, so if something's in brine, what is it? The 13 learner in this case turned around and said, tuna. I had that moment of, well, you're not wrong. It's not necessarily what I'm looking for, but you're not wrong. So again, I had to kind of question my own questioning abilities. I had to really wonder, seriously, do I need to redress the way that I'm asking these questions if that's the answer? No, it was the poem Limbo, a great poem by Seamus Heaney, followed up by the one, oh gosh, I forgot the name of the poem, Seamus Heaney poem, another one. I think it was Wife's Tale, and we were looking at the representation of women, and I was saying, yeah, so what is, if something's in brine, what is it? Tuna. And that one will live with me for a very long time, I think. As I said at the beginning of today's show, I've often wondered whether it would be worth writing some of these down, but potentially some of these do require the context. It does require you to know some of these learners and to appreciate where they're coming from. Now, some of the other things that learners have said have made me first laugh because they do seem so ludicrous, but then equally question general knowledge and understanding what is actually happening in the students' lives as well. In that, again, in a GCSE English class, we were looking at Lord of the Flies, and so we were contextualizing William Golding and talking about his experience and how he became an author, and so referenced being in the services, in the forces. And one of my learners, with all sincerity, and this is why it's difficult not to just laugh, because you think that potentially we're damaging their psyche, we're damaging what they recognize as themselves and maybe didn't their pride a little bit. But they, again, in all sincerity, asked, so who won the war? And so my reaction was, well, World War One, World War Two, is it not fairly obvious? And they said, no, who won the big war? It took a lot of unpacking, and a lot of the class kind of joined in and said, what do you mean, which war? What's the big one? What's the big one? To trying to get this learner to clarify what on earth they were talking about and why they weren't sure in terms of who won the war, and asking those questions back to say, well, okay, Who was involved? Who do you think won the war? What sort of history lessons have you been attending? Although I feel like Tom's maybe going to get quite cross about me suggesting that this is all on the shoulders of history teachers, because obviously it isn't. Okay, and then another one. I don't remember if it was the exact same learner. It was the same class, but a few weeks later, another learner asked, is Berlin still the capital of France? And I love that. I love the idea of still the capital of France, because my immediate reaction of, when was it ever the capital of France? Have I missed some big news? Have we recapitalized France? Has Berlin moved? It was really interesting to have this concept of, is Berlin still the capital of France? I quite like that concept. It could have been at some stage the capital of France, but is no longer. So I thought that was an interesting one. And these are all the ones that have been a part of my classroom, and I'm sure there are so much more. So do feel free to chip in with any ones that you've had. And I was sharing these with a colleague of mine, and I sort of said, Berlin's still the capital of France. And when we do, we almost have this one-upmanship of, oh, well, I can beat that, because then immediately after he said that one of his learners had said, is Essex not the capital of London? I feel like maybe we need to revisit this idea of maybe it's not the history teachers, maybe it's the geography teachers. And I realise I'm inviting a lot of flack off the back of just that statement. But is Essex the capital of London? No, not as far as I'm aware. But then again, maybe this is more to do with social media. Maybe this is more to do with popular culture. Perhaps it's because the only way is Essex being a programme, maybe. You can almost see the logic, can't you? You can almost see learners kind of putting two and two together and coming out with 17. Just thought that was awesome. And again, just a couple more where I feel that the learners have absolutely captured the moment and just broken into that, this is why we stay in teaching. And there is this period of grace where we recognise we're all incredibly stressed at the moment, aren't we? And the learners are definitely feeling that too, and definitely starting to engage with that as well. But how much grace do you give? So this is another one that my colleague and I were laughing about recently in the office, in that a learner being very proactive, so maybe not to be dismissed, maybe to be celebrated first, but had approached my colleague and said, you know, I really want to make sure that I do well in sociology. Are there any textbooks that you could recommend? And so my colleague dutifully sent her a list of books that she'd found particularly helpful. She'd done sociology at university also, and so passed that list on. 5 days passed, the learner approached my colleague and said, oh, I've managed to get the books that you recommended. Well, I got 2 out of the 5 that you recommended, and they've arrived this morning. What do I do with it now? It was that moment of, do I reply with sarcasm, or do I reply with note-taking strategies? Because that question of the books arrive, what do I do with it, just feels, well, I hope that you would read it. I hope that that would be pretty obvious. But it's really difficult, isn't it? Because you have to wonder whether these students are just so stressed that they've lost touch with just common sense, or whether that they were actually genuinely saying, do I need to maybe make notes on this, or do I need flashcards on this, or what are they actually asking? But that moment of, the books arrived this morning, what do I do with it? Golden. Absolutely loved it. Another one that I thought was really interesting is when, and we looked at this from an observation perspective, so you're in that observation period, and we all know that as soon as an observer enters the room, your class dynamic changes. The dynamic that was fun and exciting and everybody was chipping in, the observer walks into the room and suddenly it's a graveyard. Everybody wants to say anything. And I remember being a student where the teacher would prep us. They would say, you know, an observer is going to be coming in next week. It's not about you. They're observing me. It doesn't matter what you do. But I equally remember being in that position where, incredibly vocal student when the observer wasn't there, and then would be quiet as a church mouse when the observer was there. And that's the last thing we want as practitioners. We need the students to carry on. We want to show off our learners as to how wonderful they are. However, as soon as someone walks into the room, we kind of lose a little bit. So you already feel on the back foot. But during an observation, within A-level English language, you have categories of language, obviously, and you have to deliver those different categories of language. And observers in the room, questioning is going around. And again, this is a colleague's experience, who would say, what's a filler? And silence ensued. There was nothing. There's no response whatsoever. And so at this point, change tact. So you then say, okay, so ask, name a student that you know is going to give you the right answer. So can you give me a filler? And they reply with, So the teacher there says, excellent. Rather than a definition, I'll happily take an example of that. Very quickly moved on. And it's that idea of being the golden moment of, it's not going well, but you have to take what you can. And that idea of, what's a filler? Yes, well done. That is an excellent demonstration of what a filler is. I don't know if the observer necessarily picked up on the fact that that wasn't necessarily what they were hoping to get, but they certainly survived the observation and came out kind of feeling as though they dodged a bullet. So there's another example of where the students have saved us a little bit. So again, do feel free to chip in. What have students said that have made you laugh or have made you stunned or have left you speechless? It would be great to have other examples. Maybe we could have a Teachers Talk Radio book of what students say. It would be particularly impressive to gather all those different nuggets that we get from our learners and share those with one another. So when you're having those really stressful moments, you could just maybe flick to something that the students have said. Similarly, you see a lot of these, and I think a recent one I've seen on Twitter is where the learner has said, I don't want to write a poem, and then they've written this superb piece of poetry rejecting the idea of poetry. And learners very often do that, don't they? They very often save the moment or pick you up or carry you forward or twist it round. I remember again in a GCSE evening class, I was doing persuasion. So persuading people, the acts of persuasion, how you can use language to persuade people, what kind of rhetorical devices you need. And again, it was an observation moment. I'd got my observer in. It was as I was training to be a teacher as well. So I really felt the pressure because not only my mentor was observing me in the room, but I also had my university teacher observing me in the room. And this learner said, I don't want to do it. I'd asked them to work in pairs. They'd been given a scenario. They had to persuade each other according to their scenario. And then was asking for people to do feedback. So typical, set the task, get them to practice the task, demonstrate the task. That was the way that I was going about it. But this learner, back of the room, because let's face it, it has to be back of the room, doesn't it? Was point blank refusing. So we picked at random who was going to do their role play of persuading their partner of this particular situation. And this learner has just had tools down. Absolutely no way were they going to demonstrate what they'd just been doing. And in my, you know, in my immaturity, in my naivety, perhaps as a new teacher, in fact, I wasn't technically a teacher at that point, I just said, well, why not? Why don't you want to do it? I said, I tell you what, if you can persuade me that this is not worth your time, then you don't have to do it. And in that beautiful moment of where all the teacher gods align, he used all of the emotive language, the hyperbole, the alliteration, the simile, all of the stuff I'd wanted him to do in a role play, but he did it. He said, this is pointless, it's over the top, you're asking me, you're putting us on the spot, you're using your power to your advantage. And I was kind of stood there feeling, oh wow, this is not gonna go well, because this student was really invested in the fact that he didn't want to do a persuasive role play, but completely missing the point that they were using all of those things that I'd asked them to do. And at the end of the observation, I was convinced that my teachers, my mentor and my teacher from university was going to tell me, no, unfortunately, this was not a successful observation. But they were full of praise. They were just sitting there going, this is amazing, the fact that you turned that around. And I sat getting that feedback going, yes, I did. I did that entirely on purpose. That was entirely my thought process in that moment. I completely followed what you said the whole time, just thanking my lucky stars that it had gone the way that I wanted it to go without necessarily having to orchestrate it in that particular direction. So I must admit, that learner was in his fury at refusing to demonstrate how to be persuasive, had been incredibly persuasive, done exactly what I wanted them to do. But the golden point was where the observers felt as though I'd maximized it in that moment, had processed all of those things and turned it around to my advantage, when in actual fact, it was pure luck. So I was really, really relieved about that. So with all of those things, and as I've said, often it can feel as though it's a war zone in a school or a college. It can often feel as though you're on your own. It can often feel as though you're up against everything and everything is against you, whether that's the fire alarm going off in the middle of a timed assessment or whether that's an observer walking in just as someone's decided to kick off. It always feels as though something is going to go wrong. And it's this concept of keeping you on your toes and keeping you going that makes the job so exciting and different. And it makes it, no day is different, no day is the same rather in teaching. Everything is always changing, which can be a really good thing, but it can also be an incredibly draining thing. So the last comments that I wanted to touch on for finishing our show is the things that students have said that have warmed your heart. What is it that keeps you going back to the job, that keeps you going back to the job that actually is really intense, that is really stressful, that is so demanding of every part of you? How is it that we're all still there? And I think it's this, as much as the comedy moments, as much as there are those moments where you're crying with laughter because of the ridiculous thing they said, the very quick-witted thing that they said, or they save you in the observation by giving you the right answer by accident. But what we more often than do is have learners who are incredibly empathetic. And I've seen this a lot, and I feel as though this is something that we need to maybe encourage or tell learners that they're doing, that maybe they don't necessarily realise, but they're showing a great deal of maturity and, again, empathy that sometimes we don't even see from our managers. And so I've had a few of those over the years, and so I thought that it would be a really nice way to round things off. So again, if you've had experiences of where students have seen the stress, they've seen what you're going through, and then reacted in such a caring and compassionate way, it would be a really lovely way to finish today's show is to have a look at some of those. And I've been really, really fortunate with my learners over the years. I've also been incredibly unfortunate in terms of being on the wrong end of ill health. And so there's been periods where I've had to take a break from teaching for surgeries or for treatments or for whatever. And then I've come back, and I've always tried to get back probably to work quicker than I should have. I feel like I've learned that lesson during my teaching career. But again, because I feel compelled to be there for my learners. And in one such case, on returning to work, I walked into a classroom and there was this little parcel of gifts at the front of the classroom. And within it, there was a selection of pastel highlighters, because my learners know how much I love my stationery. I'm pretty sure every teacher has a bit of a soft spot for stationery. I think we all have far too much of it, maybe. I hope I'm not on my own in that one. Maybe if you could make me feel a little bit less like a hoarder by admitting it to you, admitting it in the chat as well, that would be great. But there is this tiny little gift box of pastel highlighters, which I'm convinced they had maybe put together. I'm not entirely sure if it hadn't just come out of their own collection. There was also a selection of little tea bags, because I love my tea. And again, it's another one. I think teachers are tea or coffee drinkers, so team tea in this household for sure. And they'd done me a little card saying how much they'd miss me, but they hoped that I was ready to come back. And I thought that was incredibly sweet. It was incredibly insightful that the learners, it was a very small class, there were only seven of them, had all kind of put together and signed this card. And I will be saving that card for forever. I also have a colleague that has a scrapbook for the emails where learners have emailed in and said, "You've changed my experience. I'm doing psychology because of you. This is now what I'm doing with my job." And they've collated all of those things together because of how powerful that is, and to remember that we do have this impact. And I think about that sometimes. I think that they're 16, 17, sometimes 18-year-old learners that I teach. I know obviously people listening to this will have younger students as well, but they show the maturity and the compassion that we often don't see of people our own age. And I think that's marvellous, that we have to remember that we are teachers that have an impact, and that impact can be incredibly long lasting. I've got learners from 7-8 years ago that still send me an email on occasion that tell me what they're up to, and normally mention something from one of our lessons, one of the things that has been said or done, that's that embarrassing moment or that really funny moment or that really frustrating moment. So they really are something special, these teenagers that we work with. So another couple, just to sort of my experiences of learners that have said things that have just kept me going, just warmed my heart. There's two more, I promise, and then it would be lovely to hear from some of you as well, as the moments where students have said things that just almost make you tear up, I suppose. And one of them is, again, it's incredibly stressful at the moment. And so we could perhaps again talk about when and where it's appropriate to raise concerns. But recently, in a classroom in front of my learners, a member of SLT approached me and was challenging something that had been said in a recent team meeting. Now, I think time and place was maybe not appropriate for that, and it was getting progressively more heated. And I then did say, I think maybe we need to pause this. Let's put a pin in this conversation and we will return to it at maybe a more appropriate moment, kind of then gesturing to the fact that my classroom was filling up with year 13s and that maybe I needed to not do it right now. And so the other staff member did leave the room, banged the door on the way out. And in that moment, I stood there very, very aware that not only was I also particularly stressed because I was wanting to defend my point and I wasn't particularly keen that this was being done in front of my learners, but then I also had to pull it together enough to start delivering a lesson. But it was the learners. It was the learners sitting there realizing what was going on and how difficult that moment had been that then said, Charlotte, do you need a minute? Do you want to go and get a cup of tea? Shall I fetch you a cup of tea? It was really sweet. So I just in the moment kind of composed myself, stood there and said, no, I'm okay. That's all right. Thank you. That's a lovely suggestion. That's really thoughtful and really kind. But no, let's get on to what's important and that's your lesson. So then we dived into the lesson and got past it. But they saw that. So where we've got adults, where I've got peers that are really stressful and demonstrating perhaps not the best professional practice, you've got the learners seeing you and having a great amount of compassion. And equally, as we approach the end of the year, we're starting to see, obviously we've sent some learners off into their study leave and we've got other learners that are awaiting their teacher assess grades. And again, this is the time where learners start to reflect on their experiences with you and maybe send you that email or message of thanks that is just summing up the year. So they have that moment that they go, oh, wow, we're never going to have another lesson with you, are we? And you go, no, you're done. This is it. you're finished. And we approach that time of year. Now, I remember, I think it was it last year or maybe the year, 2 years ago, that there was a show on Breakfast TV that was talking about teacher gifts and a lot of people saying, what's a good teacher gift? And that then opened the debate that said, should we be having teacher gifts? Why is it that we're putting pressure on parents again that maybe can't afford it to buy a teacher gift? I know that through the years, I've also been someone who's bought my teacher's gift, but it's almost where does this mindset come from? And actually, is it a helpful mindset? And one of the things I think is really powerful is that, don't get me wrong, if anyone wants to buy me a box of chocolate, they will be gratefully received. However, the gift that absolutely has the biggest impact is that message from the learner that tells you that you've inspired them in some way, or that you've kept them going, or that they appreciate the efforts that you've gone to. There's nothing better than a genuine thank you, I don't think. I think the genuine thank you is something that is so long lasting and so heartfelt, and especially again from these 16, 17 and 18 year old students that maybe we don't expect that level of emotional intelligence from. I think we can expect that level of emotional intelligence, but we don't necessarily expect them to do it. And only yesterday I received this message that just said, thank you, Charlotte, you've been one of my favorite and best tutors, teachers, mentors in my life. I can't wait to see you on results day. And I thought, wow, that was so useful, so meaningful. And it really did. It warmed my heart in that moment where we've had a very stressful period this week where we've having to gather all this evidence in and put the data all in the same place and make sure the data's accurate and all of those things. And you do start to get really overwhelmed by the pile of marking that seems to be ready to drown you. And it does get to you. It absolutely does. So if there's an NQT listening, bless you for getting your NQT year through the pandemic. That's a challenge in and of itself. But just to remember that to keep going, and the reason that you keep going is because you will get these messages of thanks from the learners that genuinely do feel impacted by you. I have an email from a learner who's just finishing their dissertation. They're in their third year at university, still wanting to tell me how they're doing, what they're doing, and still refer to some of our lessons. I have the same as someone who's gone off to university only this year that has just emailed me recently to say, I can't believe that it was a year ago that we were studying Seamus Heaney, and here I am at uni now studying literature because of my passion for it, a passion that you gave me. And that is just amazing. That moment of where learners remind you of the influence that you have is just awesome. So it would be great if anybody wanted to share their experiences, keep the conversation going. So again, you can reply on Twitter using the hashtag TTRRadio, I think it is. And then again, just kind of celebrate those moments. I think that it's really useful to remind yourself of them. And I'm sure that you have your own way of keeping things in mind of what learners have said that have boosted your confidence, that have kept you going. But maybe share them on social media too, because I think actually it's really useful to see that everybody is being recognised. We might not necessarily be recognised by the politicians, as we've heard in the news today. We might not necessarily be recognised by those in other professions, but our learners, they absolutely recognise what we do and how hard we work. It's been such an interesting year, hasn't it? There's been so many changes. There's been so many challenges and upheavals. And I don't see those going away anytime soon. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news. If you're an internal optimist, I'm not entirely sure we're out of it yet. But the learners absolutely see what we're doing. So it would be great to keep this conversation going. Thank you so much for joining me this morning and for putting up with what is the technological downfalls of myself. One of the comments that my learners have referred to me regularly is that I'm the boomer. And I remember this moment where we'd had this realization that we were going to be going to remote learning, and they would laugh at me regularly about the fact that there was so little I knew about technology. Apparently I had been Googling Google for a really long time and had no idea that I'd been Googling Google. And it was on the day that we realized, right, we're going to have to go to remote teaching. The three of my learners sat me down and said, okay, if you're going to get us through this, we maybe need to teach you a few things. So there's that moment of them taking me under their wing and showing me how to use technology. And I do, well, I often, when learners message me from years gone by, they'll say, how are you doing, boomer? I don't mind the banter. I think it's really valuable because, again, having that relationship, having that rapport opens up to conversations that can be really honest and can be really useful. So thank you so much for joining me again this morning. I hope that you've enjoyed it, and I hope it's given you opportunity to think about the times that learners have said and done things that show how much they think and care of you, but also give you a little bit of a giggle and get you through those moments that maybe you want to pull your hair out. Thank you all. See you next Friday.